नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
भुवना लोकाः पुनरावर्तिनोऽर्जुन मामुपेक्षतु कौन्तेय पुनर्जन्म न विद्यते।
From the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. But one who attains to my abode, O son of Kunti, never takes birth again. So in the previous verse, we heard about how this material world is a place of suffering. And one who is suffering will certainly make some way to get out of suffering. So some scientists may say, we are trying to go to another planet. We are trying to go to Moon or Mars or some other planet so that we can be happier there. So here Krishna says, no, that is also not possible. Why? Even if you go to the topmost planet, Brahmaloka, there are 14 planetary systems. Here we have middle planetary system. Above this there is Bholoka, Saloka, Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Satyaloka. Even if you go to the Satyaloka or Brahmaloka, from there down to the bottommost planet, Patal Loka, all are places of suffering. And one has to return back to the same Matya Loka again, Krishna says here. Why he says this? In fact, text number 16 to 22 discusses actually about the glory of spiritual world in contrast to the material world. So, you have to understand what the material world is, then you can understand how spiritual world is a superior place, far, far superior place compared to material world. Earlier we were saying about this Mama page that Krishna says on the previous world. You can return back to me. Because he does not want the soul to be wandering in this material world. In today's verse, Krishna is talking about going to heavenly planets. So you need to go to heavenly planets, although the standard of facilities are far better and the duration of life is much longer, still one cannot be happier. This is Krishna's statement. Sometimes you, even in this world, you must have been to some house where you find everything made of marble. Huge room. The drawing room is like a big hall. And there are foam beds, there are foam cushions, sofa sets. And the wash basins are decorated with gold plate. Everywhere you find pearl and ruby and everything. Even chandeliers. Sometimes you open the window, you find a sea face or a mountain face. There are huge mountains kissing the clouds. So there are big palatial buildings. People have with all kinds of facilities. Probably such houses would be in crores. There are certain such houses even in this world we can see. So Prabhupada says this is a small sample of the heavenly planets, what we see here. Similarly, you also find places like slums, where people are living in a house made of tin sheets, beaten up tin sheets, they are beaten it up with some nails or something and they are covered and made a small shack and some two or three people live in that small house made in one corner and the way they cook food. You can see how they are cooking food outside. They are cutting sabji and cooking and dog is coming and eating it. There are pigs who have got the piglets along with them. They are eating everything. So in this way, they are living in a very unclean condition in the corner of the street having a small house. So this is a sample of hellish planets. So we can see a sample of heaven and hell even on earth. So this gives us an idea that certainly there are better places where there are better facilities available. In the chapter that you said, that there are many higher planets, even in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that in many places, where there are better standards of enjoyment available, far better than what you can enjoy in this earth. When we look at the sky in the night, we find so many stars, so many planets in the sky, and always there is a curiosity in our mind. Is there anyone living there? Is it filled with living entities, or is it a barren place? So scientists have always wondered whether any living forms exist. So they sometimes said there are no living forms on Moon or Mars or any other planet first. But later they found and there are some possibility of living, symptoms of living entities, because there is water. Like they said about Venus. In Venus they say there are oil oceans. When the oil oceans are boiling, then it produces smoke. And the smoke covers the whole planet. And when you see through the telescope, they see the foam. I mean, they see the smoke and they say there must be some oil oceans. Same thing is said in Bhagavatam, that there are oceans of ghee, oceans of oil, oceans of honey, oceans of milk. So when you hear from Bhagavatam, people will laugh at it. How is it possible? But the scientists also are finding out with the limited senses that the conditions on other planets are not the same as the conditions on Earth. Initially man thought that there is no possibility of living forms on other planets. Why? Because man thought that if there has to be living form, there has to be water, there has to be sunlight, and there has to be air for breathing. Without these things, living forms cannot survive. But we find every living body requires a particular kind of atmosphere. Like we see the fish in the water, it has got the, like we have lungs, it has got gills. Similarly, we have got hands and legs to move. It has got fins to steer in water, isn't it? And you may wonder, if I live underwater, what will happen to my eyes? Water will go into my eyes. It has got a very thick, transparent membrane over the eyes, a glossy membrane, which is, you can see, but water won't enter into his eye. So all the facilities available for the fish to live in water. And the fish can live in water continuously for days and months together without any breathing problem like we might face. So there is a suitable body for that. But when we get into water, we will suffocate and die if you don't know swimming. In the same way, there are many living forms living in various atmospheric conditions. Like scientists once upon a time thought that there cannot be any life in Arctic and Antarctic. Because it's all full of ice, poles are covered with snow. So they said it's impossible for life form to exist there in such a low temperature. So even now researches are still going on in Arctic and Antarctic, but they have found when they break the ice, they find some of the living forms there, even inside the ice. They find living forms even in deserts, where there is no food to eat, no water to suck from the ground. There are cactuses living there. So cactus has such a body that it can get some sustenance from the atmosphere instead of sucking water from the ground. Similarly, we find there are particular kind of frogs living in rocks. So there are different living forms living in different places, and all the conditions are different for them. Similarly, the Shastras explain that there are living forms in all the other planets also. There are different types of living forms. So this has been a topic of interest for scientists. It was in 1977, I think. In Fatima, Portugal, there was a unidentified flying object, UFO, that destroyed 70,000 people. They found a flying saucer. All of them could observe it, and the flower petals were falling. They saw it falling, when it touched the ground, it disappeared. So 70,000 people witnessed this event. So this is one of the most famous events of unidentified flying objects amongst all the cases available. So man has begun to understand that there are living forms in other planets which may be even far more developed than us. Or they may be primitive or far more developed, but we have no idea. So scientists with the limited senses try to find out, is there life on other planets?
So one point is my statement. But now if you go at a, I was telling you the speed of Sputnik. What speed is it? 80,000 miles per second. If you go, then 20,000 years if you travel, then you will reach the topmost planet. This is the calculation of the scientists. So, most often the calculations, mathematical calculations given by scientists, leave to say it is impossible. You can never achieve it. So you have to just assume whatever the scientists say. Whereas when you go to Shastras, they give us tangible evidence of living forms existing in other planets. And in Srimad Bhagavatam we find, in Bhagavad Gita also we find, Bhagavad Gita is a world-renowned scripture. Scientists have accepted it, scholars have accepted, philosophers, all classes of people have accepted. In fact, Einstein said once that nobody in this world is able to understand my mind. So my only solace is Bhagavad Gita, he said. So he found only 1% of the world who can understand his mind. Who was it? Krishna. Only he could have a good conversation with Krishna. So when he read the pages of Bhagavad Gita, he found the verses so meaningful and so deep that it could be applied at all times, for all kinds of people, and making so much of meaning. So Bhagavad Gita is accepted as a world-renowned scripture. So everything that is said in Bhagavad Gita should be accepted in totality. If one says, I accept the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita very well, because it talks about the difference between matter and spirit. We believe that we are not matter, we are Atma, spirit soul. So if you believe that, so we also have to believe this 8th chapter, 16th verse, where Krishna says, Abhrahma Bhuvana Loka Punaravarti Nortina. That is talking about Brahma Loka. Sometimes, impersonal they say, no, all these things are assumption, that there are higher planets and living entities are there. They are all just set for some increasing the faith. So many times impersonalists are skeptical about the truth said in Bhagavad Gita, but they are very fond of reading and interpreting chapters like 2nd chapter, 5th chapter, or 13th chapter, 15th chapter. So this is not permitted. If one takes only a part of the truth and rejects the other truth, it is called Ardha Kukutanya, half-hand logic. So the hen is laying golden eggs, but you cut it into two so that he can get all the golden eggs from his body immediately. Then it won't be able to give you. So somebody says, I won't feed the hen, but I want to keep getting the golden egg from the other side. That's not possible. Similarly, we should not try to take a part of the truth of Bhagavad Gita and accept it and try to give meaning to life and reject the other part. So Vaishnavas always accept everything in totality, as Krishna says. Sarvam etad ritam manye, Arjuna said. My dear Krishna, whatever ritam truths you are telling me, sarvam etad. Everything you are saying is true, and accept them in total, without rejecting anything. So, it's not blind faith, it's a reasonable faith, because Krishna is accepted worldwide for Bhagavad Gita, and he is speaking in Bhagavad Gita that there are living entities even on other planets, even on higher planets. That is Dholoka, Saloka, Mahaloka, Janloka, Tapaloka, Satyaloka. So all these higher planets are there, and it is possible for a man, by performing sacrifices, to ascend to higher planets. You see, in the Vedic lifestyle, one is first interested in the immediate pleasures. So, one may perform in sacrifices to get something quickly. I want a child, or I want a harvest, I want a bungalow, or I want so much wealth. So, you perform some sacrifice, like this is Chitraketu. He wanted a son immediately. So, they perform sacrifices for that. But then as one progresses in Vedic way of living, then one understands that all the things that I am enjoying are temporary. So I want something that will last longer. Then they understand that there are higher planets where the life duration is very long. And the standards of enjoyment are far better than on this earth. So they desire to attend to higher planets. There are many sacrifices given, as Prabhupada explains. In this purport also and other purports also. By performing which one can go to higher planets. It is written in Bhagavatam 5th canto in a chapter called as Description of the Residence of Jambudvip. There it is explained about how opulent are the heavens. It is said in the heavens there are huge mango fruits. It's called as actually Devachita tree. So in the Gavarta tree, such a huge mangoes grow, and when they fall on the ground from the top, they are very tall trees. They fall from the top, they break, and juice starts oozing out. And it comes down, cascading down the mountains, and it flows in the river called as Arunoda. So this Arunoda river flows a long distance, and there are wives of Yakshas who are devotees of Bhavani. Bhavani is wife of Shiva. So there are Yakshas wives who are Bhavani's devotees, and they drink these waters. And it is said their bodies become so fragrant that for 80 miles one can smell the fragrance. Like, you know, if you have some attar or something, if you put on your body, maybe within this room everyone can smell it. No? But when they drink this Arunoda water, they can be smelled for 80 miles. Many will be interested to know how to get there. No? Similarly, it is said when they drink those waters, their mouth also becomes so very fragrant. That far away one can smell the fragrance. Similarly, it is explained, and there are other trees like jambu, like there is a jambu fruit also. That has a very special characteristic, it is explained, that when it falls on the ground and it breaks and it flows, it is semi-solid. It flows on the ground in the banks of the rivers, and when the sunlight falls on that ground, the effect of the sunlight and air and the juice of this fruits jointly turns them into gold plates. So these gold plates are actually taken, broken and made as ornaments, and all the demigods wear. And there are many beautiful waterfalls and lakes where the demigods come to sport, like Siddhas and Charanas. And there are other demigods, namely Gandharvas, who are subordinate to them, who serve them and even glorify them, like that. And it is explained that they have such facilities which no one has ever seen. Like I told you some examples. Like you see some very wealthy man having a very opulent palace worth crores of rupees. So this is something that we can see right in this world. But the heavenly beings have great opulences. Like we find in the chapter of 8th canto, Lagendra, that when the milk ocean, if the waves of the milk ocean come and hit the Tripura mountains, it turns many stones into emeralds. And similarly, there are many apsaras who come to take dip in the rivers, but their bodies are so fragrant that when they take dip in the rivers, the whole river becomes fragrant. And the air carries fragrance everywhere. So there are many descriptions about heavenly beings like that. We also study in the 7th canto when Hiranyakashipu goes to heaven and takes over the seat of Indra. So that is explained how the pillars are made of coral, the walls are made of emeralds, the whole description of heaven, Amaravati, is given. How great opulences are there, seen there in the heaven. So these are all not just from Phantasmagoria, but reality. Because Srimad Bhagavatam, if you read, in the beginning when you read, you may develop some faith, but you keep on reading, understanding, applying in your life, gradually our vision will become more and more subtler. To appreciate such realities existing on a different dimension. Otherwise, in the current situation of the modern world, our vision is so cross. We only believe in things which we can immediately touch, see, smell. That unless one follows the scriptures and applies in his life, he cannot appreciate such truths. To the degree to which we are atheistic, to the degree to which we are demoniac and not following the principles of scriptures, to that degree we will lack faith in these things. In fact, Prabhupada explains in one of the purports in Kuntimananda's chapter, the lack of faith that we feel in the heart is a symptom of the past misdeeds. When we perform more and more sin, we become so gross and lower that we can only perceive things like animals. Like for example, a pig considers stool to be the most delicious preparation we had ever seen in the world. But for you are in a higher platform. How do you see a stool? Abominable. You cannot even stand the smell of stool. Because you are on a higher platform, you can see it. Similarly, somebody on a lower platform may be a drunkard who is drunken and lying in the street. But for you understand, this is not fit for me to do. So you will never do that activity. Similarly, when one does more and more past activities, one ascends, goes higher and higher and higher, and is given subtler and subtler aspects are revealed to such a person. So here, Krishna is talking about the Brahma Loka, which is not this heavenly planet, which is much different from the other heavenly planets. You know, we are in Bhuloka now. So Bhuloka, Swaloka, Mahaloka. These are lokas where, actually Bhuloka and Swaloka are places where there are many heavenly delights that one can enjoy. But above them, Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Satyaloka, they are not ordinary planets. There are many great saintly people there. Those who have transcended the desire for enjoying the worldly things. Rather, they are fixed in meditation. So those souls who perform some spiritual life here, then probably go to the Mahaloka and continue their spiritual life there. Or they may even go to Satyaloka where Brahmaji resides. They may go there and they may further continue spiritual life there and become purified and go back to God. But generally speaking, they say, as Krishna elsewhere explained, Petam bhutva svargalokam vishalam chine punye svargalokam vishanti matyalokam vishanti evam trayi dharma manukhapanna gata agatam kama kama labante ive gata agatam. The souls go to the heavenly planets and again return back. Chine punye matyalokam vishanti ive. When the punya is over, they come back to the matyaloka again. So, not everyone who goes to Brahmaloka will go with Brahma to the spiritual world. Many of the sages may again descend back to the Martyaloka again. That's why he says, Abrahma Bhuna Loka Punah Avartino Arjuna. Punah Avartino means to return back again. One comes back again. So, one may desire foolishly that let me go to heaven and enjoy. Krishna explains in the second chapter how the Karmakandi Brahmanas who perform Jyotishthoma and other sacrifices to go to heaven, how they are so attached to go to heaven by performing the very sacrifice that they become blinded about any truth beyond heaven. You see, heaven or hell, both are within the material world only. We are in the middle planetary system. Upper and lower planetary systems are all within the material world. But outside the heaven and hell and all these 14 planetary systems, there is a covering of the universe. It is said in Bhagavatam, it is explained in the chapter of creation, Brahma's great Vinanti chapter, how the universe is thick 10 times the diameter, it's earth, and then 10 times of the earth is water, 10 times that is air, 10 times that is fire, air, ether, and there is global mind, global intelligence, global ego, everything. So this is like a big coconut, you see the green coconut, and it is a cross section of it, there is a thick covering and there is a little bit of coconut at the center. So our Brahmanda is like that. So this is only one Brahmanda. Like that there are crores of Brahmandas. That is why Lord Vishnu is called Ananta Koti Brahmanda. Crores of Brahmandas, crores of universes. That's like if you have a sack of, a sack full of mustard seeds. So one mustard seed could be compared to one universe. Just see how insignificant we are. So in that one mustard seed, one Brahmanda, there are 14 planetary systems. And we are in the middle. There are upper and there are lower. So at the dawn of creation, when Mahavishnu was lying in the causal ocean, all the universes came from his body. And in each of the universes, Mahavishnu again entered as, Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. So it's called Garbhodakshayi Vishnu because the whole universe is called as Garbha. And Garbha Udaka means water. So within the universe, he created water. Udaka Shai means one who lies in the Ananta Shesh. So he lied in the Ananta Shesh, and from his navel sprouted the lotus flower. In this, the first created living being, Brahma, is born. You see, Lord's potencies are inconceivable, that he doesn't reproduce like ordinary human beings are produced. From his own navel, he created a lotus in which Brahma is born. So when Brahma was born, he found darkness everywhere. He didn't know where to go, what to do. So he looked around the lotus, then he got down the stem, then he walked down. And although he reached the navel of Vishnu, still he could not see Vishnu. Again he climbed up. He only saw waters everywhere. Again he sat on the lotus, wondering what to do. Then when he closed his eyes and sincerely prayed, I don't know who am I, what am I supposed to do. I am born of ignorance, Oma Jnana Vishnu, and Jnana Pinirandasya. Then Lord took pity on him.
and Lord gave him the wisdom to perform penance. So when he performed penance, severe penance, for a long period, how many years? 100? 100 Kalasas, 100 Kalasas, very long period. And then after which, when he opened his eyes, everything became clear for him. Because when he opened his eyes, he could see, first Lord Vishnu's lotus feet was the one he saw. When he opened his eyes, he saw bluish, sapphire color, lotus feet of Vishnu. And then he found the Pitambar. Then when he turned, he found the beautiful face of Lord Vishnu with mukut, with kundal, his body bedecked with beautiful jewels, with forearms, and he looked so attractive. So Brahmaji got darshan. So his eyes, which were earlier blind, he couldn't see anything around, now his eyes could see the form of Vishnu because of penance. This is what I was telling. But if one advances in spiritual life, one's vision becomes subtler and subtler. In fact, Lord Vishnu personally came and he shook hands with him and he congratulated Brahma and he gave him the wisdom to pursue it. And then Brahma was amazed. When he saw the lotus, within the lotus, all the lotus had actually expanded, you know, and within that all the planetary systems were there and all the planets and all the living entities are kept in a frozen condition. And Brahmaji, all he needed to do was just give them all suitable bodies. Arrange suitable bodies for them and put them in suitable planets and put them in suitable conditions where they can live happily. And Lord gave him the knowledge also to do that, how to procreate further. In this way, Brahmaji created all the living entities and all the polar boarding planetary systems became filled with living entities with different bodies and doing their respective activities. Brahmanas do their activities, Kshatriyas do their activities, Vaishyas do that, everyone. They become engaged in that suitable activities. So this is how the creation happens in the beginning. This is how the all the living entities are given the suitable body. Unfortunately, in modern times, modern man holds opinion that everything came from belt and dust, or there was some big ocean in the beginning, and lightning, you know, strike the water. And all of a sudden within the water something started moving. Actually there was regular sand, there was regular ocean. When lightning came, nothing was moving because there was no light in the beginning. But then afterwards, when the lightning struck the water, something started moving in water and it got life. And then gradually a single cell organism came and then it multiplied and then it became a fish. Now sometimes the fish thought, let me go to land and see what is there. It came out of water. And because he had to come out of water, gradually legs developed, he became animal. In this way he had legs and then gradually that animal over millions of years evolved into other animals, gradually, little by little. And then different animals came. And after some time what happened? One of the bat, the bat with a wide open mouth, he was chasing the insects. This, what I'm telling you is not a story, this is told by Darwin. He said, this bat with a wide open mouth, he entered into the ocean, seeing that there are a lot of flies there. So he started swallowing flies and chasing, running so fastly. And he started expanding his mouth more and more that he became turned into a whale. That's how he became a big whale. And he said, let me remain in water only. He remained in water. So one got out of water, one went into water. Not only that, when there were animals, they were only, grazers of the grass and other things on the ground. So they were grazing the ground and eating grass and roots like carrot and beetroot and everything. But then one animal thought, now why should I only eat from the ground? Let me just extend my neck and eat from the tree. Why? He thought that, later on, in case all the carrots and beetroots and, potatoes get over, then I will not get anything to eat. So he was considered a more intelligent animal. So he started extending his neck and started eating from the tree. And he extended his neck so much that he became So just see the kind of philosophy they are speaking. So the giraffes who could not extend their neck so much and get things from the trees, they all are lying down dead all around. See the sun, one scientist himself has said about this. He said, see the pretty sight, all the dead giraffes are lying. Whereas those who are land grazers like antelopes, they are really walking, but they are eating from the ground, they are walking. But the giraffes who were not the fittest,
who could not reach the tree top, top of the tree to get the, you know, fruit or leaves. So they actually died, he said. So were their necks so long that, you know, they could not bow down and take from the ground, or were they so proud?
These are all simply funniest of the stories that we can think of that is proposed by the evolutionist. In fact, Darwin told his evolution theory, and then modern scientists have become even more funny in their propositions. They take the same thing what Darwin said, what they are saying is even a much bigger parity. And Darwin said the bear entered into water and became a whale, or they are saying the fish got out of water and became a land animal. So this kind of stories are going on. Now when we tell about Brahma, who was born from the navel of Vishnu and created the 14 planets, some people will say, oh, this is all fairy tale. You may tell children, don't tell us. But what about your tale? Your tale is worse than what we say. Because at least we say, the absolute truth is inconceivable. We accept that. God is inconceivable. We admit our inabilities, our limitations, and we certainly believe that there are things beyond human perception. There are things beyond the perception of the limited senses. Even material things, what is the perception? There are many material things within the realm which we cannot see. Although I know myself, I exactly don't know my body. Do I know what is happening in my leg inside, or my stomach inside, or the head inside? Maybe scientists may dissect the body and find out what is what to some extent. If you are the scientist, they will tell you one cell in the body is like a huge city, having hundreds of factories, producing hundreds of things. I was telling you once, you know, the chlorophyll, how it's formed, the photosynthesis process, 40 chemical reactions go on in that, in one small leaf. Scientists have found out that 40 reactions go on. So every part of the body is so delicately formed. You take the brain, 20 million volumes of books can be stored in the brain. What kind of brain is created? So recently I was reading in BTG, there was an article on stem cells. So they have written there, one scientist, after seeing all this he's writing, certainly the formation of the living body is non-physical, is due to some non-physical source. It is certainly not accidental, or it is not happening by chance. Certainly it is happening due to some non-physical source. So that makes certainly sense. So the religion is, they believe in things non-physical which are far beyond, and in order to understand non-physical things, we will never be able to use our limited mundane senses to understand them, so we have to depend on God. So when you accept Bhagavad Gita, even big scientists accept Bhagavad Gita, why should we accept only one part of it? Why not accept it totally? So here Krishna says, yes, there are 14 planetary systems. Like he says in another verse, Trayvidyaman soma papu tapapa yajnairishtva svargatim prartayante te punyamasadya surendra lokam ashnanti divyan divideva bhogan. He says, there he explains a similar thing. Trayvidya mam soma papu tapapa. There are many Vedic followers who chant the Vedic mantra. What for? Trayvidyama, soma papa, puta papa, they become purified. For a second line? Yajna rishwa svargatim prarthayante. They pray that let us achieve the heavenly planet, like that. And then he says, evam prayi dharma manuskrapa, no. Te punya masatya surendra lokam. By that punya, they achieve the sura indra lokam. They achieve the indra lokam. Having nandanandana gardens and many, many demigods flying, they have many abilities. Like in 7th kind of Bhagavatam it is explained, demigod can change their form also. Like they can catch a herb in their hand and they can disappear in one place and reappear in another place. This is a siddhi. But they can change their form totally. When Hiranyakashipu went to the Indra's abode, many demigods they change their form into rabbits and other forms. They escape from there. So they have this ability. So these people pray that let us also achieve such heavenly planets. Te punya masa te surendra lokam. What for? Ashnant Devyan, Devideva Bhogan. So that they can enjoy the heavenly delights there. So they can enjoy, certainly, but although the period is very long, still one has to again fall back to this Marthya Loka. Ultimately, jail is a jail. Some weeks ago we were discussing about jail, isn't it? Like, you know, somebody is such a atrocious act he has done, so he has to be terribly punished. Somebody who has committed a murder, so he will not be kept in an ordinary jail. He will be kept in a very strict confinement, and thick walls and tall walls, where he is made to break stone, or he is covered and put with chain, hands and legs, he can't even budge 1 inch. Similarly, very sinful souls are put in animal bodies, or in plant bodies, so that they will not be able to have much freedom. Whereas those who are better than them, they are put in human bodies in the Matsya Loka. Here there is a mix of suffering and happiness in the Matsya Loka. But those who are more pious, as Krishna says later, Urdham Gacchanti Satvastha. So one who is Satvastha, situated in goodness, Urdham Gacchanti, they go up, they go to the heavenly planets like that. So those who are pious, pious means Suras. Suras are those who accept Vishnu as Supreme. So they worship Vishnu, all the demigods. Asurastha Dipariyaita. Asuras don't accept Vishnu, Vishnu supremacy. They always deride his authority and try to always compete with Lord Vishnu. Whereas those who are Suras, they are given the heavenly facilities to enjoy, they go to heaven. Of course they worship Vishnu. But because of the heavenly delights available, they may sometimes forget Lord Vishnu because of the opulence. See, opulences like bodily beauty or wealth or great education or high birth, all these things make us intoxicated and blind. Like Nalakora Manigiru became blinded and they glided down to the tree species. They became trees. Similarly, Devadarishi's leg was pulled by Huhu. He was a Gandharva. He was also playing in the waters with them. And so the demigods sometimes misuse their opportunity and they may fall down. Or even if they don't misuse, how long can they live there? The life may be very long, but how long can they live there? Like sometimes in American jails, they keep some good prisoners, good thieves. I don't know whether you can call them good thieves. I mean, they are a little more reformed thieves. They have already lived for 6 months, 1 year, now they become reformed, they are very obedient to the governmental laws. So they put them in a library, as a librarian. Or they give them some typing job. Or they send them to do some gardening work. So they are given good treatment. Or if politicians are put under arrest, they are kept under house arrest, isn't it? House arrest means you have to be in a house, you can't go out anywhere, but you can be there within the house. You can watch TV, you can read newspaper, you can eat, you can sleep, but you can't go out. So this is still a prison. Even house arrest is prison. Similarly, although in heaven there are so many facilities to enjoy, ultimately prison is a prison. Like if the police people tell you that because you are a very rich man, we will only bind you with golden chain, not with iron chain. Is it good? Ultimately, whether it's gold chain or iron chain, chain is a chain. You don't have the freedom. So intelligent people should desire to go out of this Brahmanda, back to the spiritual sky. That is real intelligence. That's why when Krishna talks about such people desiring to go to heaven in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there he says, Yamimam Pushpitam Vacham Prabhadanti Adipaschitah Vedavatara Tapata Nanidasti Tibadinah. He is saying that there are Vedavata Ratha. Vedavata Ratha means those who are engaged in chanting the Vedic mantras. So those people are so absorbed in Vedic mantras, Nanidasti Tibadinah. They say there is nothing beyond heaven. Going to heaven is the ultimate goal of life. They think like that. Na Anya Asti Iti Vajinah. They argue. Why? Yamimam Pushpitanam Vacham Pravadanta Avipaschitaha, he says. Vipaschit means intelligence. Avipaschita means unintelligent. So they are unintelligent, so they are attached to the flowery words of the Vedas. So those who are attracted to those flowery words of the Vedas are compared to men who are desiring to eat the fruits which look like gold. There are some fruits which look golden fruits, but they are poisonous fruits. By eating them, one will perish. Similarly, if one desires to enjoy the heavenly delights, if that one wants to go to heaven, then one is actually slowing down one's path back to Godhead. That means we should not maintain material desires and think that anyway there are many more lifetimes in future. So I can go to heaven, I can have a nice time riding in a giant wheel, going the top and come down and go up again, going again and again. I heard there was one famous emperor among the Christians. Anyway, when I tell about the emperor, I also have to tell you about another great man, Oregon, there was an Oregon who was a very famous Christian father. So when he read Bible, he held beliefs similar to Bhagavad Gita. He said, certainly there has to be reincarnation, and one should be given multiple chances, several chances for purifying one's heart and returning back to Godhead. Not that within one lifetime, if you, in Christians they say, if you are good, you go to heaven. If you are bad, you will be put in hell for eternal damnation. And you have to scorch into the fire, will burn your body, and you have to keep on suffering. So Oregon said, it's not true. Certainly it cannot be true. Because God must be the most merciful person. Even an average father or mother, they give the child a second opportunity to reform, isn't it? And they don't torture them forever. So how can God, being the Supreme Father, be merciless in torturing the living entities eternally? So he said there has to be many, many lifetimes. But there was one emperor in his time, he became fearful that Christians are becoming too lazy. That when they came to know that there are many lifetimes in future, then they think, then why to worry now? Anyway, I am going to get bodies in future. If I don't perfect now, God will give me a second chance. Just like in a college, sometimes the student is very careless in study. Because he knows, etiquette, isn't it? Etiquette is there, next time I can appear. Then one more time, till it comes to having three or how many papers?
8 and 3.
8 and 3, isn't it? How many years you can do college? 7 years?
3 years.
8 years, So I can study up to 8 years, why to finish in 4 years, isn't it? Somebody may think like that. So seeing that the emperor has told his ministers to remove certain sections of the Bible, which talk about reincarnation. Even though the traces of reincarnation are still there in the Bible, we can show that, prove that. But he removed certain sections. But removing it from Bible doesn't disprove reincarnation. Reincarnation goes on anyway. So, one shouldn't become lazy like this, or one shouldn't be desiring to go to heaven and enjoy heavenly delights. So Krishna is giving us a warning. Don't be foolish, thinking that I can go to Brahmaloka, I can go to Svarloka, Maharloka and all, and I can have a longer lifetime. Traveling in planes, enjoying with all kinds of facilities. There are demigoddesses whose description is given, how beautiful they look, and there are facilities that are explained in Shastra. I told you only a small sample. If you read Bhagavatam, you will get to know more. So, one shouldn't become intoxicated by such a foolish desire. I was telling in the last class when I was telling about the famous Rishi, what's his name? Lomasa Rishi. So Ramakrishna, he understood the temper nature of the world, so we should be like that. So Krishna says, don't become attracted to the delights of the heaven, or even of this material world. Don't become attracted to the things of the world which gives you comfort now. I was saying an article in BTG, a warm bed is a cold grave, and there was an article. A warm bed is a cold grave. It's a very appropriate statement for me to make it at this time. Why? Because now rainy season, slowly winter will come. So your warm bed is a cold grave, because the morning when the bed is warm and you have covered yourself with a thick blanket, you know, your mind tells you, I don't want to wake up. So it is so nice and so comfortable. Why to get up now and take bath? Why to put in cold water and why trouble? So you feel like this. Similarly, all the living entities are sleeping on the lap of the witch of Maya. And they think, why to take trouble? Why to chant Hare Krishna, why go to class, why follow regulatory principles? Let me take an easy way out, let me just go on with it. One should never become lazy. So Krishna is warning here that even if you go to heavenly planets, again you will fall back. Chine punya matura kamishanti. In fact, it is said, in heaven, one is born youthfully, immediately. Actually, you will find Brahmaji is creating children in a very mystical way. Like, you know, he created Narada from his mind, in deliberation he created Narada. Atri he created from his eyes. Daksha he created from the tongue. Like, he is creating children from various parts of his body. So, in heavenly planets, people are born youth. And they don't grow old also. They remain youthful for a long period of time. So, if there is no old age, and if there are no diseases, and if they are born youthful and you have a very good body which is fit for enjoyment, you can enjoy all kinds of 64 colors there, So varieties of arts and crafts and everything you can enjoy. So you will think I am eternal, One can tend to think he is eternal. But then in one place it is explained how these demigods died. Chene Punya Matula Commission to reset. As soon as that Punya is over, just like a man falling from a plane, just like an aeroplane which has lost its fuel, falls to the ground. Like that, this demigods, they come down. Like that. From the top to bottom when they come. And in between there are yakshas, it is said. Very bloodthirsty yakshas, desiring to eat. So directly go into the mouth of the yakshas. And the yakshas chew them. By chewing them, they cry tears. And through those tears, they leave their body and through those tears they come through the rain. And the rain, and then they get the next body. So, this is one description given how the demigods return to earth. So, for all that you enjoyed there, that is equivalent to suffering also afterwards. So,
they
fall from the heavenly body? Yes, they fall from the heavenly body, yeah. This is how they die. So, I don't know whether this is the only way they die, but this is one of the ways at least. This is explained in one place. And then they come to the rains, the soul comes and they occupy a different body again. Of course, if one has been a demigod before, then they will have many demigod qualities, even now. As Krishna explains, those who do little Krishna consciousness, like all of us, we have done little Krishna consciousness. But if you are holding on to some material desires, then what will happen to us? You will go to heaven. Because if you are still holding on to material desires, you have to get those desires satisfied by going to heaven. Yes, and then you will enjoy the Divideva Bhogan. Enjoy all that, and then you have to return back again afterwards. Then you will get body in Shuchina, Shrimatamge, Yoga Prashtabhiya. Some of you are already born in Shuchina, Ashrimatam. Probably, Prabhupada used to say there may be many demigods and demigods are sitting here. We don't know who were the demigods before. But whether we were a demigod or we were a demon before, it's immaterial. We should try not to desire to again go to heaven and come back. Rather, we should want to wind up our term in the material world and go back to Krishna. So, when Krishna speaks these things, he is trying to inspire us. He says, please understand, whether you go to heaven or whether you are here, ultimately this world is a place of suffering. Understand that. See, the next few verses Krishna is going to explain the lifetime of Brahma and how this world is created and annihilated and created and annihilated subsequently, repeatedly. So Krishna says this is a very bad place to live because you cannot be peaceful. Just imagine you are in this room, you are sitting and all of a sudden somebody comes with a sword, waving the sword and hits all around and you are likely to be, you know, cut off. And then he goes out. Again he comes and cuts you. So can you imagine? That means, you know, there is a danger and there is no danger. Again there is danger. Yamadutas explained this in the 6th canto that there is suffering, there is happiness and there is a state which is mixed. So sometimes, you know, in our term, in material world we feel, everything is normal, you know. What's wrong? I don't find anything wrong. I'm getting my food. I have a shelter and I have my clothing. And I have my relatives and friends who are always happy with me, I am happy with them. So why to worry? Yeah? So that is a very dangerous state. Because one can tend to become sluggish in that state. Because one thinks all that I need in life to survive, especially the basic facilities, I have them. So one may tend to become a little lazy. One may not want to progress further. Like Bhaskaracharya talks about a lazy man. There was a lazy man who was leaning on a pillar, this much thick pillar. He was leaning on the pillar. He was very hungry. Similarly, the living entities are very hungry for tasting Krishna consciousness. Only that can satisfy them. Similarly, this man was also very hungry, leaning on the wall, leaning on the pillar. So one very rich merchant, he took bath in the Ganges and he was very fresh looking. So he was passing by, he saw this man, you know, leaning on the pillar and very, very hungry, starving. So he thought, let me give him some popcorn. So he purchased some popcorn and he went to give him. He took tea successfully. But this man was leaning on the pillar, so he embraced the pillar and he asked him, please give me like this. And the rich man told him, please kindly give up the pillar. Huh? You come up, you sit down on the ground, show both your hands, I will give you. He said, no. I am feeling very lazy. You just give me, I will manage. So the rich man felt very sorry. Anyway, he gave him the popcorn. So this is called a popcorn popper. This is called a popcorn bondage. So he gave the popcorn, he took the popcorn in hand. After this one went away, this fellow was trying to eat it, no? Like this. So trying now from a pillar on both sides, but his mouth could never reach the popcorn. It could never reach. Why? Because he wanted to be lazily leaning against the pillar. At the same time he also wanted popcorn. So popcorn is Krishna consciousness. Achieving a special verse. If you want that, if you are lazy lying in the lap of witch of Maya, enjoying the facilities, thinking that we will go slow, no problem. Then you can never enjoy that Krishna consciousness. So Krishna consciousness is so wonderful that one who is very strict in practice, he can enjoy it the most. One who is slack will remain slack on one hand. Such a person will find the spiritual life very frustrating. They cannot appreciate spiritual life on one hand. One cannot enjoy Krishna consciousness, one cannot enjoy material life also. Material life anyway you cannot enjoy. It's like sweet rice mixed with sand. Little sweet and little stones come and you curse. Again you eat little sweet, again stones. It's like that. Material life can never be enjoyed. But unfortunately you are not convinced of it. If only you are convinced of this fact that material life is not for enjoyment, it's meant for Krishna consciousness, then we would have gone far ahead. So we can always remember this fact that Brahmaloka and Martyrloka, ultimately it's all a place of death. Everyone's death is a thing. Threat is there always. So the next few verses we will see how the pralaya comes, how the creation is done, how the annihilation is done. I was telling, you cannot say peace in a room, somebody comes to kill you, and then again you are left free. So the threat of death is always there in this world. So nobody can live a peaceful life. So who is the foolish person who will want to live in a place of danger? Like you know, Kashmir and Pakistan. If you see, Kashmir is becoming such a dangerous place. I heard many, many kilometers people have left their homes and gone to other places. Why? Because there is threat of death. Of course they have put the border security force. BSF is there. But still bombs are falling. So nobody will want to continue living in a dangerous house, isn't it? As soon as a bird who knows that I have made this nest in this tree, I have been living here for 10 years, and I have my small spider children, and I am there, my wife, children, father, mother, everyone is living happily. But then if that bird finds that somebody is coming and cutting down the tree, he can hear the noise. Somebody is hitting with the axe. And he finds that the branch is also shaking. Whole branch shaking, he is looking where somebody is cutting off the branch. Will he be foolish to continue remaining there any longer? If he does so, he is a fool. So maybe we can see with our own eyes how the material world is temporary. So many people are dying day after day. Everyone is dying, everyone is born is dying, everyone who is born is growing old. So one should contemplate on the temporary nature of the material world and should not want to cling on to the comforts and luxuries of this world, whether in earth or in heaven. Rather, one should make a program how to get out of this world, how to perform penance in such a way that we can go back to Krishna in the spiritual world. Especially in this day and age, it is so easy, because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself came and gave his Mahamantra. In our everyday schedule to include Mahamantra, chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, 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 Rama. It's not a very big deal. Nobody can say it's a big challenge. Everyone is doing their regular activities as a businessman or as a housewife or as a student. Along with that, to include chanting Mahamantra and learning some philosophy is certainly not a big deal. If one is lazy in this age and misses this golden opportunity, then he is a great loser. But once such age comes, then the age is like one person will live for 100,000 years. Then it logarithmically reduces gradually. So one has to perform penance for long, long years, and the types of mother jobs are very difficult. That's why the demigods in heaven sometimes pray in the 11th canto, 12th canto we find. Demigods, there is a prayer for demigods. Now that this is Kali Yuga, please kindly give us a birth in earth. We want to go to earth and be born there. Because there are mixed miseries and happiness in earth, unlike the heavens. Heaven, there is too much happiness. In too much happiness, we are becoming intoxicated. Better please give us a body in earth, so that we can focus our minds on Krishna. And that too, in Kali Yuga, the age is very short. And within that short time, by this Harinam Sankirtan, one can purify oneself very quickly. So we have to be focused and not distracted. It's very important that we become completely focused. One who is focused in Krishna consciousness, within one lifetime, whether one is a housewife or a businessman, whoever it is, simply by remaining focused in this part, he will relish it more and more and more. And then at the end of the life, as promised by Krishna in the previous verse, Mamupetya, he says, such a person will come back to me. This is not one promise, he has given several promises in many verses. Even in this verse he is saying, Mamupetya Kanteya Punarjanma Navidyate. He will not take Punarjanma. Janma Karma Same Divyam Evam Yoveti Tattvatah Tattva Deham Punarjanma Nayiti Ma Eti. Such a person will not take Punarjanma again. Many places Krishna says. So on one hand he chants Krishna's names, begging Krishna to deliver us in this world and take us back to Him. On the other hand, understand the Janma Karma Chame Divya, understand how Krishna is Divya, how the material world is Bhautik, how spiritual world is Divya, how Krishna is Divine. So on one hand you assimilate this system, on the other hand we chant Krishna's names, praying to Him. So it's a very wonderful process, very easy process. So we should take it ourselves and we should give it to as many people as possible. Hare Krishna. Any
questions? With all the different telescopes and other spacecraft that we have, the ability to land it to a higher planet, we are able to land to lower planets like Mars and others, but not to a higher planet. So if any such evidence was provided, there would be no need of books, there would be no need of so much of preaching effort and
actually, first thing, anybody who wants to put faith in God by such things, such things means, I mean, perceiving things through one's own senses. That's the lowest thing. If one believes in one's senses only and not beyond the senses, that means that's the lowest way of understanding the things. So somebody is creating ash, somebody is creating gold, and showing you, then you will put more faith in such people. But you see the yogi, you can see with your own eyes there are yogis who walk on water. You can see even now. So walking on water is certainly beyond the scientific principle, isn't it? The heavy object. Yeah, even now. A few years ago there was Pilot Baba in Madras. He demonstrated how he can walk on water. He walked. Many companies, industry sponsored that event. And they took video of that. He walked on water. He went underwater, lived there for 3 full days. They sent divers to study his body and put probes on his body to check what makes him survive like that, whether he's breathing or not. He made his heart stand still. He was not breathing at all, 3 full days. Even now there are many yogis like that. Actually, you have to see, seeing the papers, 500 times events come. Somebody performs some miracle. Maybe you can check the Guinness Book of World Records. Something should be there. Parts of yogis are done. In India, they're especially famous for such yogis. Even now. You can see with your eyes, there are many people doing many things. At least there are many people whom I have seen, who have told me that they have seen people doing such things, miraculous things like, you know, removing gold or removing ashes in their hands. There are people who were doing that. No, actually walking in water cannot be strict. See, there are of course some black art magic, certainly some things like that, but there are proper yoga siddhis explained in the Shastra, like Bhagavad Gita also explains that. That you can achieve anima, you can become smarter than the smallest, you can achieve mahima, or dharti. Ishita, Vashika, Kamavashaita like that. So these are all authorized in Patanjali Yoga Sutra. So they are performing such miraculous things. There are people who do that, like that. And elsewhere in Sutra it is said that one cannot go to the heavens by any mechanical arrangement. Even Ravana tried it. Ravana tried to make a staircase by which he can go to heaven without performing pious activities. That was his desire. So in fact, many demons in the past have tried mechanical means to ascend to heaven. That's not possible. Shastra said that, see, the distance between our Martyrloka and the heaven is not just a mechanical, physical distance, but the distance also measures consciousness. So one requires that much consciousness developing to enter into that planet, to perceive the things of the planet and to live with the people there. Now, for example, let us assume that, you know, you enter into forest, you put the vesh of a gorilla, for example. You put a gorilla mask on your face, with eyes open, and you try to go and live with the gorilla. Can you understand the language? It's possible. You can put a show if you want. You can, maybe you'll get a first prize in scientific competition. But then the gorillas cannot understand you, nor can you understand them. Simply by barging into a group of gorillas, you cannot become a gorilla like that. Similarly, to become a demigod, unless one, the distance is not just mechanical distance, one has also have attained the consciousness, that much piety, then one can live amongst demigods, and one can also perceive the things around there. So this arrangement is made, karmana devane trena. According to the karma, this arrangement is made. Only then one can get. See, there are certainly many miraculous things in this world. If you want to see with your eyes, to believe that there are different dimensions, even in this, as you can see. There is a whole book on Bermuda Triangle, you know that? I recently got that book. Next verse will be talking about Brahma's age, relativity of time. So similarly, anybody who goes above Bermuda Triangle, like a boy, he becomes a 90-year-old man in a few seconds. Like, you know, within 30 seconds or 1 minute, you age from 10 years to 90 years. That's why everything goes inside, like that. So even on earth, there are such mysteries, mysterious parts existing which man has not yet endeavored. There is a book called as Drums Along the Amazon, where Indradhana Swami has written an article. There are regions of earth where man cannot reach very easily, but some of the people have reached. Like, you know, you cannot go by plane or a helicopter because there is no helipad there. You cannot go by ship because the banks of the ocean are very shallow. And you cannot have any approach road or bus because it is all surrounded by water. There are islands like that. So in Brazil, they went to an island called Amazon. They went to a place. First they went in a ship and they got down and they went in a boat afterwards. So the water was, the land was so shallow, even the boat was not able to stand there. Then they got out of the boat and they found there were many tribals living there. So the tribals were very fearful. Who are these people coming? They were ready to attack also in case there is a danger. So they went and there he has written very wonderful things. There are even videographs of the thing. There are, mosquitoes like big apples, this much size mosquitoes, little mosquitoes. And there are lizards which are 30 feet long. There is huge lizards. So they have seen so many different species there, different people living there, speaking different languages. So these things are unknown to man. So if you see the scientists, the way they speak, it appears they have completely gone to every part of the earth and endeavored everything. Actually, what they know about us is a small minuscule. We don't know anything. See, they may know one small section of the earth and make a big issue out of it. So even earth they have not endeavored. What to speak of Mars or Jupiter or any other planet. Everything remains covered. So little, we are just scratching the surface and saying we know so much. It's like that. But certainly shastras demand faith. Like I was telling you, even scientists demand some amount of faith from you. There are many things in science which cannot be perceived with eyes. It's not that everything scientist tells you can be, you know, done in a laboratory immediately. It cannot be done. If you see statistical ensembles or models, that atomic model you have seen, you know, HCP or BCC, so they make a model and keep it in the laboratory, you have seen that. So big, you know, can you see atoms like that ever? You can never see like that. But these are just some models made so that you will believe in it, that such models could be existing. But based on that, see, what they know is this. You give this input here, and there's a black box, and they get output. So they say, I'm giving this input, I'm getting this output. So the in-between thing has to be this. That's what science knows. It's simply a guesswork. So one famous scientist said, science teaches you how to doubt and remain in ignorance. This is the word of the scientist. But religion gives you faith and takes you beyond. That's the difference. So its choice is yours, whether you want to accept the verdict of the Shastra, so that by accepting the Shastra and practicing, a state will come when you can perceive. Actually, for example, the heavenly planets, first time you hear, it will look like planet Maguriya for you. But you practice what the Shastra says, gradually there will be a deep-rooted faith that will develop because Paramatma is sitting. You are not the only one. That God also is sitting in your heart, Chaitanya. Who can be perceived his material life? So he is saying, so you give a little bit of faith to God and you worship him and then he gives you more faith.
and then you surrender more, and he gives you more. So it's a reciprocatory process. But the initial state is certainly demanded. What is your question? So we have to develop the faith. She is asking, you are talking about feeble faith. Sometimes if you have feeble faith and you have got a human body, so what to do? If you have feeble faith, we are not able to progress further fastly. So if you don't achieve perfection, what will happen? You see, spiritual life, advancement means developing more and more faith. First stage is Adhashraddha, then Sadhu Sangha, then Bhajana Kriya, Ananta Nivritti, then Anastasadha, then Nishtha, then Ruchi, Rati, Bhava, Prema, like that it goes on, 8-9 stages. So first we have to put little investment of faith. If somebody says, I have no faith, no problem, you just begin chanting. You chant, you accept prasad, you come to class, you continue hearing. At least you understand, don't accept, at least you understand. That is the first stage. At least if you hear what they are speaking, see, you can hear the scientists, right? We all have the freedom to hear what scientists say. And you can also hear what the Vedas are saying. Hear both people, and you continue attending the classes, hearing, and then at one stage when you chant, you will see that the faith is developing. And what Shastra is saying, we can perceive the truth, subtle truth more and more. Then our faith develops. You associate with those who have faith. Then your faith develops. Then gradually it grows. It's like a tender plant now. You can't expect the fruits immediately. But the tender plant has to grow a little bit. Then you keep on watering it more and more. Water the faith. Then it grows into a big tree. Then it will produce fruits. Like Rupa Goswami was taught by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how the devotional sleeper grows. In the beginning stage it is very tender. You have to protect it. Similarly, our faith is very tender. Somebody comes and tells you something, immediately your faith is disturbed. Whether what he is saying might be true. But then when you advance, the same tender plant turns into a big thick tree. So your faith will be unshaken. And then in more mature states, the fruits will be produced, the Krishna prema fruit will be produced when we advance more. But we have to read more, we have to chant more, we have to take the devotional principles more strictly. You can read Bhaktisiddhanta Sindhu's, there are 64 principles given. One of the chapters, principles of devotional service. So if you try to read them and we can put them, apply them all in our life as strictly as possible, then we may get more and more benefit by that. Hare Krishna.
Now, I wanted to ask you that there are two stories which show the stark difference between how the effect of Sadhu Sangha in this one is when Gautama comes down and she wants Brahma senses her to fall down these two rakshasas, Sundar and Upasundar, something like that. So, it is mentioned that when she attempts down this earthly banking system, there is fragments on a distance of on periphery of 800 yojans, that is a big city. That much she emits fragments from her body. And so many people detect it. There's one more instance is that when Indra falls down due to Brahma here, he comes down and lives in a Buddha stem. So there also he is easily detected by Brahma because of his presence as a demigod. Now, in our scenario, when we see that a bunch of Americans, they come down to India or something like that, and they are headed by some celebrities, like some big pop singer or somebody like that, or it's just a layman from America. So, it's completely flat in newspapers that everybody knows that these people have come down here. So, their presence is felt, because they're kind of celebrity status they have. Now, when you talk of it, so much demigods, it's mentioned in Shastra that all the upper planetary systems are filled by demigods, filled by living entities. So, in this earth system, we can't have a small system for their presence. Like you look at the human body, how we prove that soul is present because the consciousness is different. The same thing, what is the symptom of presence of this all demigods?
Actually, Shastra says that in this age, demigods don't come actually.
But there are places in Meru Parvat, Himalayas, which are allotted for the Gandharvas and demigods. They certainly come. If you can ask any mountaineering person, he will tell you, how much of the Himalayas do we know? You know that? What we know is a very tiny fraction of information about Himalayas. It's a very, very vast place with huge mountains, and there are zones where certainly demigods come. But it is explained, Devant was speaking in one of his lectures elaborately about demigods. So he was telling that demigods generally come to places where the yajna is performed, because they accept the sacrifices. The result of sacrifices are actually offered to demigods, like Indraya Swaha, Varnaya Swaha, Pararudham is offered. And certainly demigods come, and certainly they accept it. But in age of Kali Yuga, Harinam Sankirtan is the only method. And even if one performs sacrifice, it will be suddenly mixed with many kinds of defects. Like even as there are, I have seen homes where they do Agnihotri and all. They perform sacrifice. But it is certainly, you know, that man is doing Agnihotri again in the morning and then he is wearing pants shirt and going to office after that. You see like that. So the kind of yajna that people perform in those days, those are unparalleled like that. So he also said, this is one of the reasons he said that demigods don't come for any of the yajna that are performed now. And also demigods, I said, they are in a mode of goodness. They never like demoniac culture. They can only be present where there is Brahminical culture. Great devotees of first things, the presence of demigods. Once Papa was telling, only 7 people had come for lecture in a big hall. So Vijay Kusantan told Papa, "Papa, we arranged such a big lecture for you, and personally nobody came, we are very sorry." Papa said, "Who said nobody came? There are so many demigods." Papa could see demigods. As I said, as we go higher and higher in subtler plane, we can perceive, it's possible. It's possible for one to even perceive demigods. But generally demigods don't come in this Kali Yuga. Devant was telling this point. That because Kali Yuga, there's so much of cow slaughter. It is said, if one kills a cow, depending on how many numbers has are there in his body, that many lifetimes he will get and he'll be killed. So demigods cannot even think of killing of a cow. Like we see, Yadure Krishna Arjuna, he says, one verse is there in Bhagavatam, first chapter. The Shaunakadi Rishi, they are asking, when they heard that the Kali Raj, he took the role of a king and he was killing the cows. He was beating the cows. Immediately they heard it and they plugged their ears and they said, "Why are you telling us such information about somebody beating a cow? What did King Parikshit do? Did he kill him or not?" And then they heard that he wasn't killed. Then they asked, "Why he didn't kill him at once?" And then they said, "Please do not talk about this anymore unless it is connected to Krishna," they said. They just can't tolerate even to hear that a cow can be beaten. But in Kali Yuga, cows are not beaten, cows are killed in millions. You can see that. Brahminical culture is going down, going down and down and down like that. Cows are killed, children are aborted, cows are killed, millions actually. You can see the statistics, how it is going further and further. So, demigods are closely connected to Brahminical culture, certainly. And one can, as one ascends in spiritual life, perceive the presence of demigods. One can understand what a demigod is actually. Even amongst devotees, like, you know, he used to tell, Shantra used to say about Bhaktisar Swami, he's like a demigod, he used to say. How he behaves with people, how he smiles, how he deals with people. See, first of all, we have to learn to see the qualities of people. In a gross state, a man is just like an animal. He cannot even understand what a demigod is. The qualities of demigods are explained in the scriptures, in the mode of goodness. So first of all, we have to come to such a stage of understanding what is mode of goodness and to see people possessing such qualities. Then when one happens more and more, like Prabhupada saw demigods face to face. And Prabhupada can see Narada directly face to face. And they are not lying and they have no reason to lie, such pure devotees. And they are, one of the qualities of pure devotee, he is always truthful. He has no reason to lie. Maybe we may not have faith in them. He may probably be telling lies to increase my faith. He may say like that, but great devotees never tell lies. Not only him, all the great acharyas. And this is also said even in Christianity or Islam, all of them talk about angels or devatas, even in amongst Greeks. Actually, if you see the Greeks, all the gods they are talking about, they have a one-to-one correspondence with Indra, Chandra, Varuna, Vayu. Only the names are different. Same thing. So these are all certain scriptures. sorry for the name, maybe 5 minutes I can be careful.